Good morning. Good morning. Beautiful day out there. Tim succeeded in making me laugh. For those of you who are keeping score, he always makes me laugh. He's a funny guy, and he knows what makes me laugh. We'll have an interesting day today. Rehoboth's own Lenny Mills Jr. will be in a little while. We're going to be broadcasting live tomorrow from Weitzel Westport with the district attorney's office. And what I like to do is, normally I have a Friday show. We have Tom Hodge and Lenny Mills Jr. We have a lot of people calling in. But we'll be broadcasting tomorrow from Weitzel Westport for the entire program. So there'll be a lot of people on hand there that I'm going to cycle through. So try to get Lenny. Lenny's going to be here today. Tom Hodgson is a busy guy. He had another appointment. He couldn't make it this morning. But tomorrow, we'll have a whole bunch of guests, including the district attorney. It'll be his last senior breakfast as the district attorney. Tom Quinn, he's not running for re-election. So tomorrow will be bittersweet in that respect. I've always enjoyed. I hope whoever becomes the next district attorney will keep these senior breakfasts going, and I think they will. But anyway, tomorrow it'll be live from Weitzel Westport. Seniors are welcome to join us for a free breakfast and an important fair as well, information speakers. It's a great, great time. Hopefully I'll see you at Weitzel Westport, senior citizens, tomorrow. All right. Incredibly sad news. I know that most of you know about this, but there are people that don't. And it's so incredibly sad that a very young child was hit by a car and killed in the Sassaquin region of the north end of New Bedford late yesterday afternoon, early evening. Really incredibly sad. Leo Choquette had reached out to me and told me, and then he was keeping me updated as he was getting updates on it, until ultimately the child did expire. And so sad. I feel bad for everybody involved, obviously the child, the person who hit them accidentally, whoever was supposed to be watching the child or was watching the child, their whole family, siblings, all of that. It's just, and the neighbors. I was talking with a close friend of mine who's an attorney as well, and a parent of a number of adult children now, and we were talking about it because it's just so sad, and we've all seen situations where this could have happened, right? Where you're watching maybe your own kids or your neighbor's kids, whatever, and you know how kids are. They're gone in a second. They don't know any better, and they're so impulsive and full of energy, and they just go. You know, you're with them a second, and all of a sudden you turn your back. Well, you don't even turn your back. You just take your eyes off them, and they're gone. They're gone. And so it's an incredibly sad and disturbing situation. What a loss. What a loss. And you got to feel horrible for the person who was driving. And we know very little right now officially. But someone who was driving a truck, I believe it was, might have been a car, and who hit the child on a tricycle-type device. Just terrible. Absolutely terrible. And I can't even imagine the sounds of the shrieking, right? The horror that was going on. On what is normally a fairly quiet street up there in Sassaquin. So our hearts and our prayers go out to the child and to the family and all everybody involved. to witness something like that, even the after effects. And guys, this is what we talk about. We talk about the stress involved in being a first responder. How does the police officer, I don't know who they are, I don't know if they're a parent or not, but certainly we all know children, have children in our lives that mean something to us, and or did anyway. The firefighters, the ambulance, the police who had to respond, first responders, to that horrific scene up there in Saskatchewan. Terrible. Really terrible. And you'd like to say, is it avoidable? Like I said, children are so spontaneous, so quick, and they just do things, right? Spur of the moment. They're not thinking. They don't have the capacity to think yet. And they're off in a split second. And it's just so sad and so likely unavoidable. Really likely unavoidable. Because you can't put your kids in a cage. I mean, you got to give them freedom to roam. And it's so disturbing. So disturbing. So anyway, say a prayer for that family, for everybody involved, if you're the praying type. I know I am. The phones are open. It's 508-996-0500. There is plenty of other news to talk about. Also, at the other end of the life spectrum, Sean Oliver's grandmother, who was obviously very special to him. They had a nice close relationship, Sean Oliver. His grandmother died yesterday. And I knew about it when I was on the air, but I wasn't sure, you know, until Sean announced it, I didn't want to announce it, okay? And Sean has announced it, and our hearts and prayers go out to his entire family. His grandmother was very proud of him. I saw her for the last time at Sean's announcement for Lieutenant Governor with his running mate, Brian Shortsleeve, at a packed house, absolutely packed house at Merrill's Wharf in the city of New Bedford. There was his grandmother and his whole family to see history be made by a member of their family, her grandson, Sean Oliver. So I was happy to be there, proud to be there, to see that historic moment in time. And I think there'll be more historic moments in time as this election cycle gets completed by November. And I know, because how couldn't you be just extraordinarily proud of your grandson? So she won't be here to see all that history, but in my opinion, my belief, my experience, she's not gone. She'll always be around. And I hope, again, everybody, keep Sean Oliver and his family in your prayers, because, you know, it's never good. It's never easy to lose a close relative. And I know Sean and his grandmother were quite close. And but as I've said, she'll always be around. And sometimes it's in their best interest. Not our best interest, because we miss them, but their best interest to leave behind that broken body and go to heaven, right? 508-996-0500. So, a lot to think about. And there's a lot of other news, a lot less serious news that we can talk about. I'm particularly interested in this fiasco in Ipswich with a young man getting kicked out of the last game of the season, last lacrosse tournament, because they had what apparently were non-tobacco objects that appeared to be cigars, although were not really tobacco. And they couldn't play in their last game, and it's become a big story. So we'll talk. That's on the table as well. I'm going to take a break, not before I take this phone call, though. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hi, good morning.
Hello.
So many sad news this morning, mm-hmm. huh? You know, with this child.
Yeah.
You know, my prayers are with the family, also with Sean. And sometimes, I mean, many times, these are things that we cannot avoid with a child. What comes to my mind mm-hmm. is when we're able to at least avoid some things. And I'm referring now to a special situation that I've been trying to work on since January. And it's regarding Route 18.
Okay.
And where Ben Rose is, there used to be a fence stopping, you know, people from crossing. Now there's they took the fence down. And what comes to mind is a child that has crossed Route 18, a four-year-old.
Uh-huh.
A few times, people have had to stop and get the traffic. This is, and I'm talking about a child with autism.
Oh, boy.
You know, the kind of child that just runs away. I mean, he even actually climbed out the window one time. The mom can't take him out. She has to hold him. He even climbed out the bedroom window one time, and they found him in the other side of Route 18.
Oh, boy.
Mom was doing something else. And I've been telling the city, I've called people about putting some type of a barrier. I want to cry.
Yeah, that's I know. I think I know. And thanks for the call, my friend. I know it's breaking you up. I've been in a car numerous times when people are crossing Route 18 at that spot the gentleman is talking about. Again, I'm not sure what you do about that because you can't childproof the world, right? I mean, that's our natural reaction, particularly after there's been such a horrible tragedy up in the far north end. You want to childproof the world, but we know that that's not really an answer. You can't do that. I mean, most of the people walking around are adults. But I do get the gentleman's concerns. That's a very busy stretch of road, Route 18, I never noticed there was a fence there. I've only now noticed there are people crossing there. I never noticed that before, but I noticed it now because oftentimes we'll be coming from Inner Bay on a Friday afternoon and we'll be coming up Route 18 heading north. And I have noticed people using that crosswalk. And I don't know what you do about particularly a special needs child who's got the urge to explore, right? And again, we don't want to diminish that in children, but we got to manage it. And some situations are harder than others, but we can't childproof the world. That's a pedestrian crosswalk. I got to be honest with you, as much as I go through there, I've never seen a four-year-old making that that move. 508-996-0500. We'll take a break, then we'll be back. Here comes Tim with the breakfast. I appreciate that, Tim, and the espresso. So I'll be flying high when this come back from the commercial break. Stick around. Here comes the caffeine.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Welcome back to the program. It's a beautiful day out there. I hope you're able to enjoy it. You know how you don't enjoy it? When that sewer or septic or drain backs up. That's why you need to have a relationship with Bass Ready Rooter. You know, the reviews about Bass Ready Rooter, you can read them online. They're constantly highlighting the kindness, professionalism, patience, and how they go above and beyond the call of duty. Bass Ready Rooter, family-owned business. Since 1974, over 50 years now, Bass Ready Rooter has been the trusted name in drain cleaning and septic maintenance all across New Bedford, Fall River, Dartmouth, Fairhaven, many, many other communities. From emergency clogs to hydro jetting and camera inspections, when that sewer starts to back up, the drain starts to back up, the septic starts to back up, stress hits fast. So you want to have this phone number on hand, 508 800-995-8012. That's how you reach Bass Ready Rooter, or their website, bassready.com. 508-996-0500. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Well, good morning, Chris. That's sad news about John Oliver's family.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. I just want to say I got to John Oliver's event on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And I've been at this a long time.
Yes.
I was absolutely astonished at his political skills in speaking with people and working in crowds. I haven't seen anybody that good since Andy Card or Paul Cellucci.
Really?
And I got a chance to chat very briefly with Mr. Shortsleeves, and I got to say, and I watched Sean, because I went there, he asked me if I would come, we've had a number of conversations, and he alone of the New Bedford City Council, the night I spoke before them, came over and said, you're right about the local aid thing, that's our money,
yeah.
And they're just not giving it to us, and that's what's forcing the property taxes, not bad management or any of that hogwash. You know, you're entitled to a dollar, and they say, well, we're short, you know, sorry, so we need what we need. But I watched him because I got there and I'm not really part of the crowd and I didn't know who was whom and I asked this young fellow and this gal, I said, are you with the campaign? They said, no, we just came down to meet with him. We're undecided. And he was coming through the crowd. He came over and shook my hand and thanked me for coming and introduced me to Joe Shortsleeves and right then and there. And I didn't go on at length, but I just said, nice to meet you. I'm a longtime Republican guy in around this area. And he then proceeded to go talk to this young fellow and this girl who were just there, I guess came out of general curiosity. And the young man and the girl, they went right at him on issues about guns and things like that. And he gave what I would call understandable, direct and to the point answers.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't give him a bunch of gobbledygook or fancy language or rhetorical stuff. He answered the questions directly, but he did it with an energy and an enthusiasm that was infectious. And I could, and I'm just so happy to say that he's the only ballot qualified candidate for lieutenant governor, and these other people, shame on them for not having enough organizational sense to get the signatures.
And, you know, as you know, Jimmy, being the lieutenant governor is a lot more difficult, a lot more decisions and a lot more things you got to stay on top of besides just getting 15% at the convention and 10,000 signatures. So I don't know how these people imagine they're going to be the lieutenant governor when they couldn't even meet that minimum standard.
Well, that's the whole point. And you know, more to the point, and something that's kind of inside baseball stuff, just remember, three of the last four Republican governors, the ones who were elected,
mm-hmm.
three of the last four of them were lost to convention. Okay, Bill Weld lost it, Paul Cellucci lost it, Mitt Romney lost it.
No, I don't think Paul Cellucci didn't lose it, I don't think.
No,
he didn't. I was there with Cellucci. He didn't lose that convention.
In 1990, when it was Weld Cellucci, he was defeated along with
Bill. Oh, yeah, Weld. I know that.
They were then elected and reelected. And you're right, the Joe Malone, Paul Cellucci one. But I could see in the Joe Shortsleeve, John Oliver team that there's a fundamental difference, by the way, between Republicans and Democrats. And that's
okay.
Like saying, you know, all right, you know, X chromosomes versus Y. But the fact of the matter is, in 1966 was the first year we elected governor and lieutenant governor and nominated them together.
Okay.
And that was Volpe Sargent. And that was also the first four-year gubernatorial term. But it created something that's become sort of one of those past practices in the Republican Party that's not a party rule or a law. But our candidates for governor have said up front who they want for lieutenant governor, whereas the Democrats, they run they run independent of each other, and then you get this unlikely pairing like Ed King and Tom O'Neill Jr. In 78. So the Democrats had kind of trying to have their cake and eat it too on the lieutenant governor thing. Well, we're all Democrats, and just give me whoever you want, and that's great. But you know as well as anybody that the role of a lieutenant governor is defined by their relationship with the governor. If it's a good one, then they are given substantive things to do and play a substantive role. And Bill Weld was a guy who didn't know a whole lot about certain things with state government.
Correct.
And Paul Cellucci, selectman, state rep, state senator, this was exactly what Weld needed to succeed as governor, a guy who knew how to do that inside stuff and that local stuff that only somebody in local government would know. The Democrats, they just kind of roll the dice and say, hey, what do you want? We're Democrats. Vote for us. And you've seen strange Dukakis and Evelyn Murphy go back down the list. They didn't always have a good working relationship. But I could see that Joe Shortsleeve and Sean Oliver as governor and lieutenant governor, this would be like Weld Cellucci all over again. If we're just going to do things, get things done, cut taxes, but deliver quality services. I was just so impressed, though, with Sean Oliver's political skills. It was, and I've known plenty of these people and seen them work up close. This guy he needed no coaching. He was a natural, and I immediately took a couple of bumper stickers and I put short sleeves and Oliver on my car, much to the girlfriend's dismay, I might add.
I got to tell you, I had the same reaction to Sean Oliver the first time I met him, which was when he was running in Ward 3, and I was unofficially supporting a guy I was friends with, Jake Ventura, who's a Republican, and he's run for a lot of offices, never quite made the W. But Jake Ventura was also running in that special election, and Marcus Ferro and I were doing a night show at the time, and Marcus and I have all been, we've been friends with Jake a long time, and the guy who was leaving, Hugh Dunn, had given Jake a heads up that he was leaving, so Jake had, you know, the ground ahead of time. But he still, when I met Sean, and Sean had put $5,000 of his own money into the special election, and then, but we didn't know him. We knew about that, but we didn't know him. And I said to Marcus on the ride over, I said, you got to take a guy seriously who puts $5,000 of his own money into the race for a city council race. That's a guy who doesn't intend to lose. And then we met him. He was so personable. Just really a great guy, not a know-it-all by any means, right? A regular working guy who's a quick study and doesn't try to pretend he knows everything, knows that. But he'll tell you, look, I'm going to look into that. And that has been my experience with Sean Oliver.
Well, I'll leave you with one last corollary to this, Chris, because you and I have been playing the inside baseball game a long time.
Yeah.
And I have a cautionary to the Massachusetts Republican Party. Donald Trump has yet to get more than 35% of the vote statewide. And we watched several candidates who were good candidates, would have been good office holders. One of them was a good office holder. Our good friend, Sheriff Tom Hodgson, yes. Maybe the best sheriff Bristol County ever had, maybe the best one in the country given what's called for in that office.
Yes.
But he was broomed out because of his affinity to Trump. Jeff Deal, who I've known Jeff since he was a state candidate for state representative, and he got tagged with Trump being too close to Trump, and that cost him in two elections that I think he could have won. And Elizabeth won, most despicable person who ever had their name on a ballot. And I'm saying to my good friends in the Republican Party, and I still have a few, okay, that says, if you want Maura Healey for four more years, then you stick with Mike Minogue. He's not Mike Minogue in his ideas and things, and I'm sure he'd be a fine governor. But he's got that Trump thing that is not a winning formula in this state. Whereas Joe Shortsleeve gets to say, hey, I was in state government, and I'm, what was his phrase? I'm the one who grabbed the MBTA by the ankles and said, okay, let's to get some things done and improved it. So if we want Maura Healey, I remember a poor guy named Dean Phillips, congressman from Minnesota, ran against Joe Biden
Yes. And
all the Democratic primaries and lost heavily, 97-3 in most of them. And he said, if you nominate Joe Biden, you're reelecting Donald Trump. And I am telling you right now, you nominate Mike Minogue, you are reelecting Maura Healey.
Thank you for the call, my friend. That's Jimmy DuPont, Rainham School Committee member, longtime member of the Republican Party. Although I do know he left recently. I thought he left anyway. He did run as an independent against Kelly Dooner and the Democrat for Mark Pacheco's state Senate seat, or the seat held for decades by Mark Pacheco, radio entrepreneur and state senator from Taunton. But Jimmy's very knowledgeable about a lot of political questions, and I do appreciate his contribution to the program. Yeah, look, I think the real story of the lieutenant governor's race is that Sean Oliver succeeded where everyone else failed. I mean, that's an important thing to understand. So far, nobody else is on the ballot except a kid from New Bedford. He's not a kid. He's 41 years old, but a young man, guy from New Bedford. For the first time in anybody around his life, that a guy from New Bedford is running statewide and might be the only Republican on that line for lieutenant governor. It's a marvelous accomplishment by Sean Oliver where everyone else has failed. We believe everyone else has failed. If you're an Ann Manning Martin supporter, she's, of course, a Peabody city councilor. You cannot be secure yet in your belief that you're going to have the opportunity to vote for Ann Manning Martin in September. Ann Brensley has gone the way of the dodo, and there she ought to be. But Sean Oliver's on the ballot. Sean Oliver is on the ballot. He made the convention minimum, made the signature minimums. He's on the ballot for lieutenant governor. And kind of interesting because he's got a little bit of a rocky relationship with Mike Minogue, merely because he wanted Mike Minogue to debate. We know how Candidate Minogue feels about that. He doesn't want a debate. Sean wanted to put a debate on in New Bedford for all the Republican candidates. Mike Minogue is still resisting debating in the Republican primary. But Sean really wanted to put New Bedford on the map. So he wanted to hold a debate for all the Republican candidates in New Bedford, in Ward 3 at the hotel over there. It was a fine location for it, but he couldn't get everybody to agree to it. And that created some tensions with Mike Minogue and him. But they very well may end up being running mates. By the way, as much as I appreciate the last caller, Jimmy DuPont, I'd be remiss if I didn't correct him, although I don't relish having to do it. It's Brian Shortsleeve, not Joe Shortsleeve. Joe Shortsleeve, I believe, was a columnist, or is a columnist, certainly a member of journalism, maybe at Channel 7. Anyway, it's an often made mistake, but the governor's candidate is Brian Shortsleeve, who's was here in Fairhaven just Tuesday night. And I've heard really great things about that unity rally. Sean Oliver, Brian Shortsleeve. Okay. Take a break. It'll be a short one. We come back, I'm going to play a little clip from Channel 5 about these young men, high school seniors in Ipswich, not being able to participate in the last lacrosse game of their high school careers because of what looks like a misunderstanding that they were using tobacco products when in fact they likely were not. Take a break. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy. This hour is brought to you by the cold beer and the world's best chicken wings at Rose Alley Ale House. Nice day to sit on the deck at Rose Alley, downtown New Bedford. By the way, I also want to put a plug in for their onion rings. I think they're like the only, you see these, they got onion straws out there. They don't serve that. They serve real hand-cut onion rings at Rose Alley. Fantastic. Fantastic. If you like onion rings. Okay. So, for those of you who don't know, Ipswich is almost in New Hampshire. Big horse country up there. It's a beautiful area, although the ocean is a little colder than ours. Ipswich has a major controversy going on. Looks to me, in my opinion, the administration in the school department overreacted. Ban these kids, young men, from participating in the last game of lacrosse for the season. So it's all over television. It'll likely be a nationwide story. And there's a lot of elements here. Number one, it's okay to say I made a mistake and reverse yourself. All right. It's okay to reverse yourself from time to time. Sometimes the kids are right. Sometimes parents are right. And is the era of tobacco prohibitionism gone too far that even the mere appearance, even if it's false, of using tobacco can cost you as a young man or woman? I mean, it's just gone too far, I think. It really has gone too far. Here's a clip from Channel 5 about what's going on in Ipswich. And quite frankly, all the local schools are going to be faced with this if they haven't already.
Is in Ipswich, where parents say the photo doesn't tell the whole story.
Tonight, these seniors and now recent graduates on the Ipswich High School lacrosse team say they were suspended by the district for violating the MIAA's rules against tobacco use. The team was set to take on Cohasset yesterday in the semifinals, but instead forfeited due to a, quote, shortage of available players.
It's tradition. Everyone smokes a cigar, but we knew that we couldn't smoke the tobacco.
Senior Christian Genikakis says his father, who supplied the cigars, knew the rules and went through the trash and found the boxes and receipts to prove to the principal, Jonathan Mitchell, that these cigars were home-rolled with chamomile and green tea leaves. The novelty cigars they ordered online didn't arrive in time for graduation.
Brought it to Mr. Mitchell, and he looked at it. It had all the tea leaves or whatever it was in it. And he shook my dad's hand, looked at him in the eyes, and said, "Your boys can play."
And then the superintendent got wind of it and did not like what he heard. So he came in yesterday morning, and he blew the whole thing up.
Hours before the team was supposed to leave for the game, the seniors told they couldn't come. We went to Superintendent Brian Blake to get his side of the story around 1:25 this afternoon.
They don't want you in the building, so they're going to ask you to leave the building.
So it appears the superintendent called the police on us to leave the administration building. No one ever asked us to leave the building until the police showed up and they said that we couldn't be in there anymore and we were asked to leave. He then eventually came out. Anything to say to these kids? Any comment for the kids?
It's really devastating and upsetting and sad. Just a bunch of mixed emotions.
So the MIAA says that the Ipswich High School administration reached out to them regarding the lacrosse tournament, saying that they did not have enough players and would need to forfeit. The MIAA says that they never investigated this incident. We're live here in Ipswich. I'm Peter Eliopoulos, WCVB, News Center 5.
So that's a clip from Channel 5. If you're familiar with the story, if you want to comment on it, has this ever happened to anybody in your family? Have you ever been, you know, when we were growing up, at least when I was growing up, I'm a Gen Xer, right? Graduated high school in the 80s. Nobody had cameras like this. I mean, you had cameras, but you never, wasn't like today, where they're ubiquitous. Everybody's got a really beautiful camera phone, right? Everybody's got a camera and the ability to text it. So this couldn't have happened, I don't think, when I was growing up, because people didn't have social media. They didn't have the ability to text photographs. I don't know if you're familiar with a comedian, Tom Green. Tom Green, Canadian comedian. He talks about what it would have taken in the old days to send a picture to somebody, an inappropriate picture. And he does this whole big skit. It's really funny, where he talks about getting the film developed and then buying a stamp and mailing it to somebody. But meanwhile, you're drinking the entire time, right? So you got to stay drunk before you would ever send a picture like this. And he versus today, where you can take a picture with your phone while you're drinking and text it to somebody and wish you hadn't done it type of thing. But in the old days, you couldn't do that. You had to, you know, get the film developed, mail it, all the rest of that. So, and also, nobody cared, really. Maybe they should have, but nobody cared if high school seniors were smoking. Not really. And particularly, people understood, yeah, you take a celebratory picture with a cigar right before, you know, a big experience or at the end of a big experience, like graduating or final game of the year, whatever. No, there was no jihad against tobacco like there is today. It's just really outrageous. And the fact is, wasn't even tobacco. It wasn't even tobacco. And this superintendent, by the way, I don't know the superintendent. I only know what's been in the news. But the fact that the superintendent of Ipswich didn't ask Channel 5 to leave, he called the police, had the police tell Channel 5, I mean, to leave the building. You heard the police officer saying to WCVB, they don't want you to be here anymore, you know. And then the reporter saying, nobody asked us to leave. They called the police. And then the superintendent won't even talk about that with him. They waited outside in the parking lot to get an interview with the superintendent, who overrode his man on the ground, his principal. The principal investigated this allegation of tobacco use. He dismissed it because he knew it wasn't tobacco. Then the superintendent overrides his man in the field. That's never a good leader, okay? And by the way, don't you look for an opportunity to help get the district out of this trouble, right? Don't you look for an opportunity to get these kids into the game, off the hook, because it's not a big deal, really, rather than saying, overriding your principal as a superintendent, saying, no, my man made the wrong call. I'm going to override him publicly in front of everybody. That's not a good leader, in my opinion. It's just not. And in my opinion, you look for the opportunity, if you're a real leader, to get your troops off the hook. Okay? To say, hey, stand up for him. Those weren't tobacco cigars. They were chamomile cigars. And so they didn't do anything wrong. And we're going to let them off the hook, let them play the game. That's what a real leader does. I don't think you continue to grind into this thing because what? He's an anti-tobacco zealot? I don't know. Or he's got to be in charge to the point where he calls the cops on the Boston media. 508-996-0500. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning.
Hello.
Perhaps they should have been smoking pot. Maybe it would have been better off if they were.
Sadly, you're right.
Gotten away with that. Or perhaps they should have been illegal aliens smoking pot. And they probably would have said, why would you want to not let these guys play? I mean, isn't that racist? They would have, you know, it's amazing how far we've gone to one side. Yeah. Who would have ever thought we would have come to the day where cigarettes would be pretty much illegal and pot would be legal? And look at how they treat these kids. It's just, you have to wonder also if it's because of the lacrosse team and that probably the majority of them come from well-to-do families too as well. Who knows? But you would like to think the superintendent would have researched it just a little bit before sticking his foot in his mouth. Now it's on him.
Yes.
Now it's definitely on him and not on the team at this point in time, but it's too bad that it happened.
They better have good SAT scores and sending kids to a lot of really good colleges and careers. Otherwise, I think that superintendent's days could be numbered.
Yeah. It's unreal. Who would have thought, you know, we'd come to this point in time. But, yeah, that's the woke mentality, or that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to know.
Thanks for the call. It's hard to know, but I will tell you that when I was a selectman in the 90s is when the anti-tobacco jihadists really became a force, a tremendous force, actually, in local and state government, in part with tobacco money, in part by getting the money from the tobacco companies to fund fairly lucrative jobs at pressing anti-tobacco regulations. Look, I don't think smoking is a good thing for people. I don't encourage it to the degree that I have any ability to encourage anybody's behavior. I don't think young people should smoke. I never smoked tobacco, really, occasionally cigars. I never smoked cigarettes. My parents smoked cigarettes. It's really harmful to your body. It's not good, but neither is being a weirdo who oppresses young men because you saw a photograph that you misinterpreted as tobacco. So therefore, even you're going to reverse your principal who made a logical decision by conducting an investigation. You're going to anger all these parents. It's just, again, I question that superintendent's judgments. And again, who calls the police on the news media because they didn't leave your office when you haven't even asked them, hey, listen, we're trying to conduct school business here. It's the end of the year. We know this is a big story, but you got to go on down the road. We're kind of done here with you. Instead, calls the police. That's a guy with a little bit of personality, in my opinion, deficits, all right? These are news people. They're used to being told to get lost. Trust me, I'm in the news business. You get used to being told to get lost. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. News guys will go on down the road. You don't have to call the cops on us. Sometimes we got to call the cops on you, but you don't have to call the cops on the news business. What you do is just go over and turn the coffee pot off. Hey, no more free coffee. Get the hell out of here, news guy. They'll go. It's like when you pull the tap off a keg at a keg party because you want everybody to go home. You don't have to even tell them. You just take the tap off, take it in the other room. They'll get the message. Turn off the coffee pot. The media will get the message. We'll be right back.